You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The Pride of Detroit PODcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and it's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park, and each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions and the PODcast, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced, all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering. For our listeners, we have a special offer for you. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout. Get you 15% off your order. That's POD15 at RighteousFelon.com. Welcome to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, PrideofDetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Wow, I did that backwards. Just shows you how far that one has fallen. Live now on Twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit and on YouTube.com/@PrideofDetroit. We're here and happy to bring back an old friend here. This one's going to be a bit of a shorter one. We're going to talk about some of the rule changes that are being proposed. We're going to be talking about what we expect from the ownership meetings, some other news for the Detroit Lions, but we're getting started on a very big and probably very scary topic. But first, I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host, at Chris Perfett on Twitter, ready to just dominate this one as always. And joining me as always, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. Jeremy's been gone for a little bit, enjoying some well-needed vacay, and he's back. He's still in parts unknown from the looks of it. He's doing the new YouTuber trend of holding your microphone without a pedestal. Let me guess. Oh, there is a tripod on that. It's just not working very well, apparently.
Yeah, I'm sitting in front of a desk where it was on the desk, it would be way far away from me. But yeah, I can tell people I'm in Florida. I'm in the Orlando area for the owners meetings coming up this week. They've landed, the owners and the coaches, and we'll be speaking with a whole bunch of them starting Monday and Tuesday. And I'll get to go to some swanky party on Monday night, which is going to be weird and fun. Unfortunately not a lot of fun to be had, in the week I was gone. So, guess it's time to just talk about it.
No, you picked a particularly ominous week to go on vacation. We want to address the situation on Cameron Sutton. It's been about 4 days now. The situation developed extremely rapidly. We didn't want to really touch the situation until we had more information, maybe to see that the situation had something of a resolution. Unfortunately, it is still not with a resolution. Cameron Sutton is still at large in the state of Florida with a warrant out for his arrest. I think police picked up his license plate on one of the Florida scanners, but so far he still hasn't turned himself in. Nobody has seen him. It is a situation that is very scary, to say the least, and we wanted to wait for this to develop a little bit more before we got to any ramifications for the Detroit Lions. Unfortunately, again, there hasn't been one, but the Lions did announce on Thursday that they have released Cameron Sutton. We should probably start, Jeremy, on the issue at hand of why Cameron Sutton was released, what kind of trouble he is in the state of Florida, what he is currently fleeing a warrant for. We do not shy away from big topics like these before. We have covered when players and coaches have had legal troubles and allegations. And the one against Cameron Sutton is some of the most serious that you can really have out there right now.
Yeah, no doubt. The charge itself is domestic battery by strangulation. There's no ID currently given for the victim. Only an announcement that, you know, this person did suffer injuries that are similar to obviously that charge. Cam Sutton apparently has been ongoing in a custody battle, paternity battle for years, it sounds like. And I'm taking some of this from the Detroit News and Free Reporting, but their case was as active as March 6th, which was the day before the alleged abuse took place. They were scheduled for a Zoom meeting, a Zoom hearing. Final judgment in the case had been made in February, but there was another hearing on March 6th. So you can't say for certain whether these two things are related, but it portrays that Cam Sutton has been having legal issues dating back to his Steelers days. This is something that has been going on, custody battles and things like that, going back to his Steelers days. And so paints a little bit bigger picture of what's going on here, but we don't really want to speculate too much here. All that we know is the charge and that he's still out there ducking the police.
Ducking it for a little bit. So I guess the actual incident took place on March 7th that Hillsborough right. County Police in Florida, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department responded to. And that they were dealing with this, but for whatever reason, a warrant was placed out on Wednesday, March the 20th. I think I have that day of the week, right?
That was, to be clear, that's when they announced the warrant on social yes. media. The warrant had been out prior to that, but that was kind of their last, like, they hadn't been able to reach him, so they threw it out mm-hmm. on social media.
Yeah, this was the "Do you know this man?" tweet, and I think that's when Lions media, Detroit media, and the Detroit Lions themselves right. became aware of the situation. In that Cameron Sutton was apparently on the run from Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, and that's where we still stand to this yep. moment. Nobody has located Cameron Sutton as the recording of this podcast. At 9 p.m. Eastern, March 24th, Sunday. I don't know if that situation is going to change anytime soon. I know he had another house or a house that he hasn't been back to. They released a license plate for a Jeep Grand Wagoneer that Sutton is supposedly driving again that's shown up on scanners, but we don't know if he's driving it or where he is. We don't know his mental state, his physical state right now, nothing. And that is why this is so serious and scary, and why I've just wanted to see him safely back, because no matter what the charges are, you at least want to be represented in a court of law. And no matter the guilty or not, I don't want to see a man dead over all this by his hand, by the police's hand, by anyone's hand.
Yeah, no, I think it's already a tragic enough situation. You know, we're talking about families being broken up probably in ways that are irreparable. You just hope that there's some sort of happy ending that can be made of this really, really tough situation.
Just a resolution without bloodshed is all I'm really asking for at this point.
Right.
So that's the situation. It's very difficult. I understand, however, there were Lions fans antsy for more information. We usually kind of, it's a bit more of a rarity these days to see a player wanted and missing for this long. Again, by our count, 4 days since it was known that the warrant was out for Cam Sutton, and still really nothing that we have to show for it. However, that did not stop the Detroit Lions. They were gathering information, or at least trying to. But I think, Jeremy, no matter what the situation is on the aggravated battery domestic violence charge, running from the police and having a warrant out for your arrest is something that obviously doesn't fly in the NFL. And I believe that the Lions on Thursday cut yeah. Cameron Sutton.
Yep. We still don't really know what information the Lions had. Maybe they only have the information that we had that led them to this decision. We'll probably find out a little bit more about that here at the owners' meetings. I imagine that is something that's going to be asked of Brad Holmes, maybe Rod Wood, Dan Campbell as well. We'll hear from all three of those guys, maybe Sheila as well this week, and get more insight there. But yep, he is released. And I can talk about the finances really quick, because I know a lot of people are interested in the finances, and we don't have all of the information regarding the finances in terms of what the Lions are going to be able to recoup and what they aren't. But what we do know via the transaction wire is that they gave him a post June 1st release. And the very important part of that, at least when it comes to the immediacy, is that his contract is still fully on the books. The Lions are getting no cap relief right now, even though he's no longer on the team, because a June 1st release means that contract stays on the books until June 1st.
Until, yes.
The sticking point here that I think a lot of people are interested in is that his $10.5 million salary that he was due this year was fully guaranteed. Now, this seems like the most likely thing that the Lions will be able to recoup. In fact, Pro Football Talk is already reporting that his guarantee has already been invalidated. So that means as soon as the contract is off the books, that $10.5 million will be off the books and will, quote unquote, be savings for the Lions. The other aspect of the June 1st release means that all of his prorated salary signing bonus, which $8.72 million is still left in the signing bonus proration from what he signed, which was like an $11 million signing bonus, all of that would normally accelerate to this year when you cut him. So the Lions would take that $8.72 million cap hit this year. But when you make it a post-June 1st release, it's essentially adding a void year. So three of those signing bonus prorations will hit next year, and only one will hit this year. So theoretically speaking, if the Lions get this $10.5 million salary non-guaranteed, they get that back. They'll only be on the hook for $2.18 million of his prorated signing bonus this year, $6.54 million next year, for that total of $8.72 million. Now, they could also recoup some of that. That is a much longer process. It's what they did with Calvin Johnson. It's what they did with Barry Sanders in terms of trying to get some of that signing bonus back. Except, obviously, this is a much different situation. This is a legal situation, right? Yes. This is not early retirement. This is a legal situation. But that is an ongoing battle that sometimes takes years. So the Lions are buying themselves sometimes by having that salary cap hit later in 2025 instead of 2024. But the long and short of it is that the Lions are probably almost certainly going to get the $10.5 million guaranteed salary back, which means only count $2.18 million against the cap this year. But all of that doesn't happen until June 1st. For now, he still has the normal 12 point whatever million cap hit on the books, and that's going to stay on the books all the way through the draft.
So I think some fans hear that and wonder what the league can do about that dead cap money. Is there anything, is that something maybe we might see? You mentioned the owners meetings, and I know you think that'll come up. Is that a topic specifically to come up? Is what do we do about the dead cap money that was prorated? Because of the situation, can that get taken off the books completely? Was there even anything in the contract that would allow anything like that to be taken off? Or is that even legal by NFL standards?
Yes, but typically it takes until after there's legal, like the legal process typically has to play out first. Really, the only thing the league can do right now is the guaranteed salary stuff. They can make it so they void the guarantee in his salary this year, which like I said, Pro Football Talk says that has already been done. I haven't seen it reported anywhere else, so I can't say for certain that $10.5 million salary is no longer guaranteed. But remember, again, the $10.5 million salary remains on the books until that June 1st cut. And then at that point, we'll see, I guess, whether that salary was guaranteed. If it was guaranteed, then it stays on the books. It's guaranteed money. If it wasn't guaranteed, if they get the guarantee out of the contract, then it just comes off the books and the Lions are no longer on the hook for it.
I want to take a quick break here, just kind of to gather our thoughts a little bit. On the other side of this, I do want to talk about kind of where this leaves the Lions from a roster situation on Cameron Sutton. They've been busy, of course, in free agency with cornerbacks, re-signing Emmanuel Mosley, Amik Robertson, Carlton Davis. But I still think there's no avoiding the impact of Cameron Sutton's sudden and very quick disappearance from the roster. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the Pride Detroit Podcast, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some stuff. As Jeremy mentioned, he is down in sunny Florida to go to the ownership meetings. Big man is going in big places and going to see all the whores divorce. Did I even say that right?
No.
Not even. How am I supposed to say that? Come on, tell me. Tell me.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Really? That's how you spell hors d'oeuvres?
It's not hors d'oeuvres.
I thought hors d'oeuvres was a different word. Oh my God. Okay. You know what's not an hors d'oeuvre is the Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. It's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions and the Pride of Detroit POD cast. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park. Each 2 ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein. Each stick has 8 grams. I'm making Jeremy lose it right now. I'm glad I can at least bring a smile to his face after these last 10 minutes. If it's good enough for the Lions, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is from Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced all natural black Angus beef, prides themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering. And we're going to use our powers and we're going to reach out to Righteous Felon and see if we can get a flavor made for the Oakland Golden Grizzlies, because damn it, do they and our friend Ryan Matthews, a proud OU alum, deserve one. But until that time, you can go to righteousfelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout. You'll get 15% off your order. That's promo code POD15 at righteousfelon.com. Listen, folks, we love this stuff. We eat it all the time. It's good. Jeremy had plenty on the flight down. It got him very dehydrated. He had to drink a lot of water, but it's fine. It's part you need salt in your body, too.
If the Grizz would have had a little Righteous Felon, they probably would have made their free throws down the stretch. Hey, just saying.
Feed more of that to Golkey.
That's right.
Yeah, make more threes. Man, what a story. POD15, righteousfelon.com. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Pride of Detroit PODcast. Let's talk a little bit more about Cam Sutton before we move on to some other news that we have for the podcast. We've talked about his cap situation right now. We do need to talk about the roster. As much as the Lions have been active in free agency with their cornerback rooms, bringing in Carlton Davis on a trade, bringing in Amik Robertson. Yeah, sorry. I was blanking on the name for a second. And re-signing Emmanuel Mosley. It's something where they've kind of... I know some people have a certain vision of Cam Sutton or don't think that his loss is anything more than negligible, given how he was playing down the stretch. But as far as I'm concerned, this was still the Lions' CB1 or CB2. Before anything was really said or done, before the draft, before any of this thing. And it leaves the Lions down a virtual starter in a bit of a precarious hole. Emmanuel Mosley has to come back from injury. Carlton Davis has, has had some injury history himself. Yep. So it's not a great situation right now. I mean, Amik Robertson on the roster as well. Brian Branch, you can kick out to corner. But after that, you're talking about some players that I don't know if they'll still be on the roster at some point here when we get to August, including Stephen Gilmore and Khalil Dorsey. It is a precarious situation that has made the situation from corner more precarious for the Lions. And I guess the question is to Jeremy, where do we really go from here? Are the Lions still going to be active in free agency? Are there any even scraps of free agent cornerbacks left that they can go after? Or are they just going to have to admit that in this case, they might at some point have to draft for need in the 2024 NFL entry draft?
Yeah, it's a tough question because, yeah, like you said, I think a lot of people were hoping that the addition of Carlton Davis as your CB1 moves Cam Sutton to your CB2, and then Cam Sutton plays better as a CB2 because a lot of people believe that's kind of where his talent was anyways. We won't really ever get to know that. I do like Carlton Davis as the team CB1. I think that's a good move. I think that's puts them at least at an average CB1, which is something the Lions haven't had until since Darius Slay was in town. Now, in terms of your CB2, you kind of have two half measures, right? You have Amik Robertson, who is probably best served as your CB3 coming off the bench in case of injury, but he has a plenty of starting experience and has been up and down. He'll fight out there. I would put him kind of on par in talent as a guy like Jerry Jacobs, a guy who fights like hell, is going to put a ton of effort out there, is going to make some plays here and there, but is also going to be mistake prone. His physicality gives him a certain ceiling. I mean, he's a small dude. And so he's not someone you really want out there every snap, but if he's on your bench coming out, you feel pretty good about that. And then you have Emmanuel Mosley, which is the other half measure, like you said, coming back from the ACL. We're hoping he's ready by the beginning of the season, but you never really know. So yes, I would say the Lions are in the market now. I wouldn't say they're in a great position at cornerback. I think they're improved from where they are last year, but the depth is thin. The top tier talent is thin. The issue then, though, is can they? I do think there are some talented guys out there that can help them, right? We could go back to the well of doubling up your Gilmores, bring on Stephon Gilmore to pair with Stephen Gilmore. Xavien Howard is out there, although he has some sketchy things in the past that might not work if you're trying to replace a guy who is currently on the run. Adoree Jackson, JC Jackson, Patrick Peterson, if you want to go the veteran route. But again, the issue here is that you're carrying around Cam Sutton's contract right now. You have the June 1st release, so you're not going to have that money necessarily to sign a guy to a 1 year, $8, $9, $10 million contract if it requires something like that. That said, there is kind of a workaround that you can make it work. Let's say the Lions have a certain amount of money that they have ear hold for the draft. Their first round picks, their second round picks, they have that honeypot, that rainy day fund. They can dig into that now. And then when June 1st comes and they get the money from Cam Sutton's contract back, they can use that money to sign your draft picks. You can sign your draft picks whenever you want. And a lot of times you get all the way up to training camp. So that money becomes available June 1st. You can use that money for signing your draft picks and then use the money you were saving for those draft picks right now. It's kind of a way to circumvent it and they could make it work. The question is how aggressive are they going to be at the cornerback position now? I don't think that I would be very surprised if they don't sign at least one guy. And I'm not saying he has to be a starting capable guy. I think they need more depth anyways, but I'm not saying right now, like they have to draft a guy with their first round pick or the second round pick. They can make the players that they have work, but they would be wise to at least add one in free agency just to be sure.
Right. The other issue facing the Detroit Lions is if you were going to go cornerback in, say, the first round, you're going to be looking pretty deep on the when you get to take a cornerback. Of the top corners out there currently on draft boards, like the top four or five are all expected to go in the top 25 picks, I would say. That might also include Kool-Aid McKinstry, which I know Lions Twitter is rapidly falling in love with, partly because of the name, partly because of his where he's been mocked in a few positions. My belief on mocks is always assume that anyone mocked to you is going to go five picks before you, especially in the case of McKinstry. And we talked plenty about this before, Jeremy, about the new premium on the cornerback position and cornerback talent in the NFL draft. Like, I don't think there is a world, unfortunately, where the Lions could get someone like Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, who is probably on the big board at cornerback one and quarterback one or two, and probably going to be gone in the top 10 picks, even on a projected quarterback heavy class, on a projected offense heavy top five that we expect to see. And like, there are drop-offs. And unfortunately, when we start to get down to guys like TJ Tampa and Mike Sainristil, and Mike Sainristil is a slot corner, that doesn't really help you on the outside. And Enos Rakestraw, who might be there on day two, but again, you're not in a prime position on day two either.
Yeah,
that's going to require
you're picking in the 60s.
You're picking in the 60s. You are in a position that is not very good for taking cornerbacks where they are projected to be taken. So it means more draft capital needed to, or potentially reaching for certain players to fill this hole. But this does put Brad Holmes in a position where if he can't find his answer in free agency, he might have to do the thing he's tried to avoid every draft. Draft by need. He's not going to do it. I expect pick 29, assuming it's still pick 29 by this time at the end of April, is not going to be spent on a corner, but on some other player that better suits the talent that he falls in love with, which means if he does take a corner, probably not until late day two, which means your talent isn't going to be at a premium and probably at best needs development, and you won't see that next year.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. That if the Lions do take a corner in this draft, he's not starting right away. I think it's possible they grab one at 20, 30, 29, whatever they're picking at. Kool-Aid is an interesting one because he went into 2023 as like the top guy and then didn't produce as well as a lot of people thought last year, and then was, I think, completely out of the first round conversation going into and through the combine. I believe he didn't run at the combine, but he ran at his pro day and ran like a 4.48, which is totally good and acceptable. And now he's kind of back into that first round conversation again. So it's on the board, obviously, for first round, but it has to be a guy they love, like, period. If it's not a guy that they love, they're not going to reach for a need, even if it is a need. And to me, cornerback isn't as desperate of a need that they need to reach for it. It's not in a good situation. It can be improved, but knowing Brad Holmes for who he is, he's only going to take a guy if he really loves him and likes the value at that pick. He is not going to say, oh my God, the top five corners are off the board. We need to grab one now before it's too late. He's not going to do that.
Right. And the Lions have tried to, the good news is the Lions do have a little bit of a year's experience working with subpar corners. Sometimes, however, it still results in very long passes being completed all the same. So it's going to remain a concern for Lions fans, regardless of what happens. Let's talk a little bit about the owners meetings coming up here. Again, you are down in Florida for the owners meetings. Not the main reason you went there, but I am starting to dread that might be the main reason you went down there day by day, which means that I need to force you into another vacation at some point.
Good luck.
Let's talk about it a little bit. There's plenty coming up here. I have one thing in mind that I do want to talk about, and I'm hoping to get more information for the owners meeting. But first, let's talk about what you are expecting to hear, what you're looking to hear for, and what we can maybe expect to hear from you when you decide to report in later this week with another podcast from the owners meetings.
Yeah, there's a couple things. Because all the coaches are available during these, AFC one day, NFC the next day, all at the same time. My first kind of plan of action is to talk to some of the AFC coaches and talk about some of the Lions guys, the new Lions guys that are maybe previously from AFC teams like Amik Robertson, DJ Reader, get a little bit of inside information on that. And then later we'll talk to Dan Campbell. We'll talk to Brad Holmes. We'll talk to Rod Wood. We might talk to Sheila Hamp. And so, we'll get a lot of questions. We'll obviously ask them a little bit about the Cam Sutton situation and what they know and why they acted the way they did. We're almost certainly going to get uniform information. And maybe even by the time you're listening to this, we have some more uniform information. I expect to hear hopefully a release date in the next month or two. But Rod Wood will obviously be asked that. And then, just kind of the normal questions you ask Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell around this time. You talk to them about free agency and their thoughts about it. You talk to them about the draft in a month here. We're only a month away somehow from the draft already. And it's always a really neat time to kind of talk to them in a little bit more of an informal situation. They're not in front of a podium. We're not all sitting, raising our hands or trying to talk over each other. We're just chilling and having a little breakfast together. So it's always a little bit more relaxed, which I think can lead to a little bit more information. So it's actually one of my favorite events to attend, and not just because I get to go to a fun party with expensive food.
What kind of breakfast?
I don't know yet.
Breakfast potatoes?
Probably. I think last time I went,
biscuits, which
was in Fort Lauderdale, we got a, you know, just like a breakfast buffet type of thing. But like
Elgin better than waffles.
And it wasn't like it's not like we have a waffle maker. We're a little more high class than that.
Look at you, fancy McFancy.
I'm saying this while holding my microphone with my pinky out.
No, again, you're doing the YouTuber thing where it's like, just let me show you my swank sure microphone by holding it, even though it has its own cradle. I am curious to see where the owners go. And I know this is for a vote later on, but we're getting more and more drips of what NFL teams are proposing as far as rule changes coming up here. One of the big ones, I know the Lions were involved in, one of the big ones from the week was the hip drop tackle. I find this one particularly fascinating that they want to rule on a penalty for a hip drop tackle, partially because the pushback from the NFLPA has been almost unanimous,
right,
to not have this as a rule. And yet the pushback from the NFL is very strongly on the side of that they believe that they are doing this for safety, which I find to be ludicrous and stupid. But either
really?
Way, there seems... Yes.
Why do you think they're doing it then?
Because they don't want their quarterbacks touched in any reason. This is a league that is now predicating itself on offensive talent. And unfortunately, they have to deal with the reality that at any point in a game of American football, people can get hurt. And then what happened this past year is high profile cases of certain people being hurt during a tackle that can be qualified as hip drops. Maybe it is. They are unsafe, but you're putting it up to a subjective thing, and this feels just as reactive and short-sighted, trying to keep their moneymakers in the game, as it was to say, hey, yeah, we will allow reviews of pass interference. They are reacting purely to what was just a big screeching point and on standalone games.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that argument. It is very interesting for the NFL to be railing against taking out of an unsafe play. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and say I know how to tackle someone safe. I don't know if there is a safe way to tackle, but like according to them, and I don't think they're lying here, it's like a 20 to 30 to 40 times more likely to occur in an injury with a hip drop tackle than any other kind of tackle. And it is interesting to hear players say, no, we don't want this.
Well, I think
because usually, obviously, they're on the side of you need to take player safety more into consideration. This is an instance in which I actually think they are. The problem is, what's the alternative? And that's something that obviously the players have a unique viewpoint on, where coaches and owners may not have that viewpoint of, okay, if we're not allowed to do this, what can we do? And
right.
That's a much harder question to answer.
I think the problem for them is like the players have pushed back because they realize so many other tackles, so many other means of making stops have been taken away from them, yep, and they are being pushed to tackle lower and lower. And that means sometimes going around the hips, and it becomes harder and harder at the speed of which the NFL is played, yep, to isolate and determine a specific tackle that is within a very specific. It's like epee fencing, man. Like there's only one area you can hit. Like, right. And yeah, it's hard to do it when you're going 30 miles an hour out there.
Yeah.
The other one that I saw that was put forward today was something about, they're still meddling with the touchback that if it's like you kick it through it, it's going to go out to like the 30 or 35, or I forget the actual thing.
Yeah, it was. So they're essentially trying to adopt the XFL rules. And the change that they just made was that it was originally a touchback would go to the 35. Now it's going to be the 30. But it, you know, everything seems to be pointing in the direction of that one eventually passing. Still hasn't been put up to the vote to the coaches or owners, but that's one, I guess, owners, not the coaches, but seems like that is one that's going to pass. And listen, something needs to change with the kickoff. I'm still of the belief that you just need to get rid of it, but I like the fact that they're on the verge of adopting something that's radically different from what we've seen. And again, like this is, we talked about it when the XFL came back. We talked about it when the USFL came back. Like one of the awesome things about those leagues is they get to try out new things like this. Sure. And it seems like this is another case where they tried out something, the NFL liked it enough where they're probably going to take it.
And that's been proven through history. The NFL usually very resistant to change, and then a league comes along like the AFL or the original USFL in the 80s,
right,
and they try certain things and it becomes kind of a lab. I think the XFL had really cool ideas on kickoffs. This, however, I think is probably the most contentious, I think, and most radical of changes that we've seen being proposed in this time for some of the rules right now. So I think it's just kind of precarious in that regard.
I just want to talk about one rule change, because it's something I've been kind of railing for and on this podcast before, at least during one of the breaks. Someone proposed, I think it was just the competition committee, proposed that they move the game clock to decimal again. Not again, for the first time, which is something that's made a ton of sense. And part of the reasoning for that, and I think another rule change that they were looking for, which relates to the Lions in a way, is you can now, they want to make it so that you can review whether a play gets snapped in time before a quarter ends, before the game clock expires, which obviously did not happen when the Lions played the Packers in week 4 and Jordan Love was allowed to get a playoff when the third quarter clock had expired, which ended up being a big 44-yard gain. So those are two rules that I'm way in favor of. I think decimal timing should be not only with the game clock, I think it should be the play clock for the same reasons, because 0-0, you shouldn't be able to run a play after 0 on the play clock. You shouldn't be able to run a play after 0 on the game clock. What are we doing here? Why are we building in a weird gray area when
a very inconsistent one too?
Yes,
an extremely inconsistent one.
So pass that one, coaches and owners. I know you're watching right now. I'm like 20 miles away from you.
20 miles and closing.
Maybe you know what, I'm not going to ask any of the coaches questions tomorrow. I'm just going to be like, hey,
stare at them.
Pass the decimal clock,
did you listen to the Pride of Detroit POD cast? Did you listen to the Pride of Detroit POD cast?
That's right.
That's all I've got to say there.
I'll hook you up with Righteous Felon, I promise.
We'll give them 15% off. We give everyone 15% off. That's what we do.
But we won't tell them that we gave it to everybody. We'll say, oh, it's just
for you.
I got to steal, man.
Steal. It's got to steal. I'm sure Jerry would like that. Anything you wanted to touch on, Jeremy, that we have covered on PODcast while you've been on vacation?
I don't think so. Just thanks for all the kind words when I came back, for all the misuse and things like that. I do feel a little bit recharged and ready to take on a big week here in Orlando, and then home stretch for the draft.
Yep. Good timing too, because I might disappear here soon myself for several things I need to do. But until then, we're going to wrap up the POD cast. Stay tuned again. Jeremy is, I think we are planning to have something later this week involving you with the owners meeting. So we should have some updates from there. I think our first bite series will continue. Are we heading to talk about Baltimore?
Maybe.
You're not even going to help tease them that? Okay.
I haven't set anything up yet, so I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver.
That's all we do.
No.
Well, for myself, at Christopher on Twitter, for Jeremy Reisman, at Detroit Online, it's time to get out of here. We'll see you star side. The Pride of Detroit PODcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and it's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park, and each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions and the PODcast, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced, all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering. For our listeners, we have a special offer for you. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout. Get you 15% off your order. That's POD15 at RighteousFelon.com.